Welcome, aviators. My name is Chris Palmer from Angle of Attack. Welcome to another question and answer session. We call it Motivation Monday. Sometimes it'll come out on a different day, but it's your flight training, aviation career, written test, ground school, anything aviation related that is trying to help you move forward in your aviation journey. That's what this is all about. It's your questions, things that are pressing for you. You can ask these live each and every week. I really push hard to get my schedule to allow it on Mondays, where I can be live on Instagram answering your questions, and that will help you move forward in a positive way. So this week, we have a little bit of a focus on instrument and that transition from private to instrument, although there are some other topics in between, from flight instructor conversations to where I got started in business and what keeps me motivated. A little bit about our ground school here at Angle of Attack, just a handful of different things that I think will be really helpful for you, and almost about an hour of your questions. I really try to cram them in here. So let's get right into it. Here is your Motivation Monday for this this early part of March. Enjoy. Let's start out with a non-instrument question first. There are quite a few instrument questions, but a lot of them today are revolving around how to go from private pilot to instrument, but I just wanted to answer this question right out of the gate. It was right here at the top. So I'm 35 and I got my private pilot license. How do you see the chances of getting a job once I get my CPL or commercial pilot license in 2 to 3 years? Your likelihood of getting a job is basically 100%. It's just a matter of what kind of job you want. There are so many jobs out there available in aviation right now. We are seeing a little bit of uncertainty now with the coronavirus going around and what that is doing to the markets and the airlines. I think that's definitely worth paying attention to, even when it comes to employment. So we need to keep an eye on that, but a status quo as it's been historically the last several years, and looking forward into the future with all the projections that the major companies and everyone's been saying, is that there is a pilot shortage and those spots are being filled. And I'm definitely seeing that throughout all of aviation. So your chances of getting a job are essentially 100% if you put in the work and you get that done. You're not too old. I mean, 35 is not old to get into this. So you're actually very young, and you know, there's plenty of opportunity that lay ahead for you in aviation. So yeah, keep it up. Good luck. And I'm sure that you'll do just fine. Again, you got to put in the work and make it happen. How long after private to wait before going into instrument training? So this is an interesting concept, because I think the main holdback with instrument training is it is so different from what you experienced in your private pilot training. It is very much about the knowledge that you gain and the homework you do on how everything works within instrument. Now, I kind of think that private pilot, it's a good mix of both the practical skills of flying the airplane and getting used to that discipline, in addition to the knowledge that you need to bring together to understand a lot of aviation. I wouldn't say it's necessarily 50-50. I think it's probably 60% knowledge and 40% handling the airplane, maybe even more than that. But when we're looking at instrument training, it is completely different. I even tell people it's 90% knowledge and 10% skill. There's just so much that goes into instrument that takes a lot of effort, mental effort, that you can really get ahead of. And so you're going to hear me repeat this several times today, because I do have several of these types of questions here about instrument. And that is that I want you to take your time. I want you to have it absorb. I want you to get started on your ground school for instrument fairly early, because you are going to be studying a lot more for this license than you even did for your private pilot license. And that's how to best get started going that direction. How long you wait to do that, that really depends on you and your budget and all of those things. I think you can start to dip your toes in the water of instrument training right away. I think that's a pretty good thing to do. And then you can roll into some safety pilot stuff, things like that. Some of these terms may sound new to you. So if you go to angleofattack.com, you're going to find there on the front page, if you scroll down a few sections, you're going to find the six-pack guide to doing your instrument rating. It's a really important guide because what it does is it helps you do the math on how you're going to get your flight time and tells you about flight simulators, tells you about safety pilots and how to build your time there. So go check out that guide. Sign up for the email to get that guide, and that'll really help you. It's a free PDF, so it's just, you know, you just got to go enter your email sort of thing. So go check that out. It's a good start. And I would say that for a lot of the instrument questions today, go check that out. Let me answer this one. I really don't want to be self-serving, but here we are. And I talked about my ground school several minutes ago. So what sets your ground school apart from others? One thing about me is I really enjoy the context of aviation. And I think that the number one thing we need to learn in aviation, what we're trying to learn, is great decision making. I think with that decision making, or leading up to that decision making, knowledge is a powerful tool to get to that point. And so my ground schools are a little bit different. We don't just get into all the nuts and bolts of how you're going to pass the written test, but really what I'm trying to achieve is that you are understanding the context of the material that we're covering. In this case, let's just talk instrument and how the instrument system actually works, why we're doing the approaches or departures or en route flying the way that we are, and how the air traffic and control system is playing into that entire picture, and what you as a pilot need to do to remain safe. So I want you to go through your training, meaning like your written test preparation, which would be your typical ground school. But I also want you to have a leg up when you start your flight training and have good mentality there. Because after it's all said and done, after you go through the mentality of getting your check ride finished, I want you to be a safe and confident and proficient instrument pilot. That is what I'm after. So I may not be able to be with you the entire way all through your training, but I'm very interested and invested with my time and my career and my life in a lot of cases to assist those through my business to get to that end goal of being a safe pilot in whatever discipline that they are working on. So I would say that's how I set myself apart, is I add a lot of human factors and other safety mindset things along with the knowledge that you need to do that particular license. So I've even thought of a better title for my ground school, is like not just a ground school, because it's so much more than that. But that is what sets apart my ground school from others out there, I believe, or at least what I'm trying to achieve and what I'm working to achieve. And it's going to be an ongoing process for years. I don't ever really plan on stopping that improvement process. So that's the end goal that I'm trying to work toward. Just wanted to get that question out of the way so that we can move on to some other things that can help you guys instantly here. Finish my private pilot license straight in the instrument ground school with no break. How to avoid burnout. So just a few minutes ago, I talked about this, and I really think that you've got to be careful not to just jump straight into instrument really hardcore, because you do have to build some cross-country time, 50 hours of it, between your private pilot license and getting your instrument license. Now, some of the instrument cross country you do can count toward, or does count toward, that 50 hours, but there is still quite a bit of experience in between there, where you're going to be going and getting $100 hamburgers with your friends and just experiencing flight. I think that because we're such mission oriented people as pilots, especially those that actually achieve this, we've got to be careful to pace ourselves and make sure that we don't burn out. And so you got to play the long game a little bit. So I really think that you should just go out there right after your private pilot, for the most part, enjoy that new license that you have some fun, learn some good lessons by doing some great cross-country flights, stretch yourself a little bit in a safe way, and then, you know, move into the instrument training in the sense that you can start on your ground school right away. So rather than hammering your ground school and say, I'm going to get it done in 2 to 3 weeks, why not try to absorb that instrument knowledge, which does take more of a steady pace absorption rate than like private pilot. It's just not something you can cram for. There are a lot of new concepts, thoughts, ideas, procedures that your mind needs to wrap around. So I think that while you're out there enjoying your private pilot license, just the VFR part of it, that you can, you know, start on your ground school, but just, you know, take it easy, start to work into it little by little by little. And eventually you'll get to the point where, it is time for that big push, and you'll be better prepared for it. So that's kind of my mindset. I know it's not that way for everyone. People are on different programs, but I'm never one that really thinks that flight training shouldn't be fun. I think if we're not having fun, something's not going quite right and we need to readjust. And instrument flying can be absolutely fun. It is hard, but it can be fun. So I think if you're totally on burnout, then you got to dial it back a little bit. How could a VFR-only pilot effectively use an FTD like a Redbird? So this is, behind me, this is an AATD. It's an advanced aviation training device. It can be used for instrument training and log the time up to 20 hours, which is very, very cool. But the concept of using such a tool for something like VFR flying is interesting. I'm more of a proponent for instrument flying that you really need to use the biggest instrument in VFR flying, which is the window outside and attitude flying and getting used to the senses of flying. And that's a huge part of the private pilot license. However, I think there is a lot to learn in the procedural and the emergency realm when it comes to like a training device like this. So you could get in here and do your checklists. You could get used to radio calls and pattern work and the steps you go through to do that. You could do emergency procedures that you couldn't safely do in the real world. So there are a handful of different things that you could do in a trainer like this that are more procedural than those that are actually flying the plane. Because when you're flying the plane for instrument, you're really actually not too worried about the fact if you can land or take off or not. We know you can do that. You've already proved that in private pilot. What we want to prove is that you can do the procedures, which are fairly easy to emulate realistically in something like this. So yeah, good question. Again, most of the applicability is for instrument, and there are some things you could do for VFR flying. So here's a question. Best strategy to study for your private pilot written. I'm also going to add in the instrument written to this one as well. So I actually did a podcast on this quite a while back, and my strategy to pass the test hasn't really changed much. So the way to find that is if you go to Google and you search the pass in passion, kind of a play on words there, but you know, we have a passion for flying, but we also want to pass our test. I know, it's a little cheesy, but if you search the pass in passion aviator cast, you will find that. So I think the big thing is, you know, a lot of people just want to pass the written test. They're not trying to do anything else, but just pass the test. And passing is 70 for part 61. And I just think that's way too low. I was just having lunch with someone that is actually taking their instrument check ride flight at 3:30 here in about an hour. And he had gotten a 95 on his test. Not the type of guy that would do that, right? He's had to study really hard to get there. But then there's this other side of the industry that says, oh, you just got to pass your test and get it out of the way. I am not of that mentality. I think that the more work you do to study and pass your test well, the better off you're going to be. I won't endorse a student for their written test. I won't endorse you if you take my online ground school, unless you score three tests in the 90s. I don't care if they're the low 90s or wherever they're at, but they got to be in the 90s so that you can show me you're doing the work and you're actually learning what you're doing. There are other sources of information that want you to do rote memorization to pass the test. But then what happens when you go to your actual flight training and you don't understand the material, you don't understand the charts, you don't understand the procedures? It did you no good to study and pass that test. Maybe in some small ways, but you're going to be drinking from the fire hose to an even greater extent when you go and do your flight training. So I'm really big on putting in the work and getting it done the right way. That means that you know, take a ground school. I'm really a huge proponent of ground school. There are some people that don't. They just go in and start to take practice tests and try to memorize everything. That doesn't get you anywhere. Take a ground school first, then start to work through the tests, find the areas that you're deficient in, study on those areas, rinse and repeat until you get into the rhythm of taking actual practice tests that are like the real tests, and then you score highly and go take the test right away. That, in a nutshell, is how to prepare for and pass the test. But I just think we have to commit ourselves to actually gaining the knowledge rather than just trying to pass the test. So there you go. Do I need to know everything before my private pilot written exam? You don't need to know everything. Here's the thing about aviation, okay? You are going to buy these textbooks for your private pilot license, and you're going to buy textbooks for your instrument and your commercial maybe even. And you are going to cram and learn all this stuff and know quite a bit when you go in and take your test. But that private pilot book, you're going to be using that private pilot book when you do your commercial test. You're going to be using that private pilot book when you take your certified flight instructor test. In other words, we never stop learning as pilots. And so if you plan on the fact that, hey, I don't need to know everything right now, you need to know enough to be safe. And I would say several steps beyond that. I definitely like people that are over-prepared, slightly over-prepared than under-prepared. But there is a point of diminishing returns where, hey, there is a lifelong of learning here, which is what I want you to plan for as a safe aviator, rather than just trying to cram the knowledge, pass the test, and move on like the learning has stopped. It hasn't stopped. I'm really big on pilots taking on this thought of being lifelong learners. So enjoy the journey. Yes, pass your test now, but also plan on doing even more over time, learning and learning and learning as you go along. That is what is going to keep you a safe pilot long term, and is that continual growth. So that is my advice there on that one. That no, you don't need to know everything, but you need to be striving to know everything over time. There you go. All right. How can I convince my flying buddy to scream clear instead of just saying clear prop? Well, have a little contest, okay? So this clear thing, I'm infamous. I'm gonna say infamous, not even famous, for having this clear thing that I scream before starting the prop. People practically whisper the clear prop term, okay? They'll open the window, oh, clear prop. Nobody sees what's going on. Nobody understands. Nobody hears you, okay? It gets no one's attention. You yell clear like I yell clear, and everyone's going to pop up, turn their head. They might be shocked and maybe a little bit scared. But hey, they saw you, and you're not going to hurt them with your prop. So isn't that the entire point? So have a little contest. See whose method works better. You could even do it in the same startup. Have them yell clear prop. See if someone out there turns their head. And then you do it the right way with the Chris Palmer way and see who wins. I guarantee you mine will be better. And you'll gain someone's attention that wouldn't otherwise pay attention. It's a proven fact. I've done it so many times. Like, people just look shocked. In fact, the other day I did it here in Camarillo on the ramp. And this instructor that was walking out, he was far away. Like, I projected. It was good. And he saw me and, like, kind of looked at the plane and looked a little shocked and scared and then went like this and held his hands up and, like, made a 30-degree turn the other direction. He wasn't anywhere close, but I scared him away from coming anywhere close to us. Should I wait until I pass the test before I start flight training? I think it's interesting to discuss this in the case of instrument flight. So we are going to talk about that here in a second. However, typically I do like the written test to be done before you go in and do your flight training. I think specifically for private and commercial, it makes a lot of sense to get your written test done before you actually go in. It makes a lot of sense with CFI as well, because you already know all that material. You just have to kind of go through it. That and the FOI. But when it comes to instrument training, I think it's okay to take a little bit of a departure from that, because the concepts are so new and different and foreign and not always common sense that I think it's sometimes good for you to get several hours with your instructor to specifically cover and work on some of the aspects that are coming out of your written test study and fly that sort of stuff so that you understand what's happening. So say that you are struggling with the concept and the layout and the execution of instrument approach procedures. So you know technically where to find some of the information, but you're not really clear on how it all comes together or why you're doing it or what it looks like when you actually fly this procedure. So to go out with an instructor just for several hours, maybe it's one lesson, maybe it's two lessons, and do some of these approaches, a lot of the light bulbs are gonna start going on in terms of what you've been learning about those procedures. And then you're going to be able to take that little bit of experience back to the written test study and continue your work. There are several things that are just really helpful in this realm that will give you a little bit of an introduction to start instrument flying. And then you can go and take it back to the written test, have more of a concept for how or what they are talking about, and that will help you in posting that or getting to a quality level of passing that test for the instrument. So instruments, again, instrument is very tricky because it has a lot of extra information that doesn't come as natural for those that found private pilot to be fairly natural. So it just takes extra time and effort. And so I think being creative with the rules, the unwritten rules, like my unwritten rule of getting your written test done first, you know, maybe there's a little bit of creativity there on that specific license that you can do to move forward. So good question. Any tips to help get into the mindset for FOI? And Glenn Cheecham, or gosh, I don't know if that's your last name. Anyway, he's a regular. Glenn is always here and he's working on his instructor license. So the FOI, the fundamentals of instruction, is essentially at the end of the day a teaching guide and a teaching psychology handbook specifically for aviation. And it has a lot of great concepts in it that are kind of mainstays of how to be an effective teacher for those that know nothing about it and it doesn't come natural to. And it works pretty well. Here's the thing though. I think it's a lot different, and you guys would agree with this. It's a lot different to read about flying an airplane and actually flying an airplane, right? I mean, it's almost like reading about what ice cream tastes like. I know there's always that example of someone explaining to you what ice cream tastes like and what it feels like. So I think that flying is a lot that way, but teaching is a lot that way as well. So to get you into the mindset for the FOI, the fundamentals of instruction, you can't just read about it. I think a lot of the concepts are better practiced and experienced prior to taking your actual, definitely your flight instructor license or certificate check ride. So I'm big on practice teaching before you actually go take your test. I think it's the best way to practice for your flight instructor test. And that is going to be a great place to study or rather practice the concepts of your FOI. So regardless of how you go through and learn the FOI, whether you're literally reading the book or you're just getting the cliff notes on the book, you should practice those in person in a practical way with real students. The way you can do that is under the watchful eye of another instructor and offer your services to them. And I think that is one of the best ways to do it if you can find that opportunity. Interesting question here. Switching from Part 61 private pilot to Part 141 instrument and commercial. So I think your question is, you just kind of put that as a question there. I think your question is probably, what are the pros and cons of doing so? Here's the thing. I was thinking about this morning. I started listening to this book that was pretty impactful that talked about victories versus long-term goals. So instead of just having like your eye on a single prize, that most fulfillment in life comes from the long-term goal. And so one of the drawbacks I have with Part 141 training is that there is no time for extra concepts or extra ideas or holistic thinking. There's very little time for that. Like, you have a curriculum, you're working with that curriculum, you have your, like, everything set in a row that you're going to do. And it just doesn't leave a lot of room for creativity and extra growth. And I think that's what we lose when we do 141 training, or the potential of losing. Whereas 61, you can technically take as much time as you want to get it right, to really understand, et cetera, et cetera. That said, there are clearly, you know, thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of students going through part 141 training every year. We typically keep getting good and safe pilots. And so at the end of the day, like, a lot of the pilots are coming out of these programs basically on the same level with everyone else. No one is really handicapped in one way or the other when it comes to the type of training they go through. I just find that like 141 training, you're just getting to the goal of passing the check ride. You're not necessarily getting to the goal of the lifelong of learning that I was talking about earlier and being a really good pilot in that area. It's more getting the structure and the foundation down perfectly, absolutely perfectly. It's perfectly engineered so that you can build on that foundation later. I feel like that's the difference between part 141 and 61. I've done both, and I think it really actually at the end of the day just depends on the school you're going to and the instructors you have. So always demand that you are getting the best. You can even do that at a 141 school. Make sure that you have the instructor that is just working for your benefit and that you click with. And that's probably the best advice I can give you in making that switch. How long would you expect to train before first solo cross country? See if I had a plan, but curious on your take. I guess you got the whole question in there. Appreciate it. This is someone else that is comes here quite often, and we message back and forth quite a bit. If you guys ever have a question, you can always message me as well directly. So, how long would you expect to train before your first solo cross country? See if I had a plan, but curious on your take. So it really just depends. And because I am a part 61 school, I actually take a little bit of creative liberty here, especially when it comes to the cross country training, because where I'm at in Alaska, that's where my flight school is. I have the opportunity or rather not even the opportunity, it's a necessity sometimes to travel by plane from where we are to another location because of the geographic distance and so on and so forth. So I make a lot of trips to Anchorage that are for a practical reason. So I need to get there for a doctor's appointment, or I need to get there for a meeting or something like that. Because I am in a rural town, and going to the big city means that we have to take a special trip. And when something like that happens, it takes us out of the realm of just a training flight and puts us into more of a realistic scenario on what a pilot would be looking at for their cross country. So I like to typically do the cross country training, start it right after the solo, but I'm also game for starting that before the solo to give them context on where we're going if that opportunity arises, or maybe even give them the opportunity to build some extra cross country time. Because it's a lot different when you have a real mission you're trying to get to, and the pressures of achieving that mission are real. There's just more of a safety, weather conversation, everything that comes together that you can talk about as a student and an instructor that they will be facing in the real world, rather than just a training flight that's very easy to cancel for basically no reason, which is usually a weather reason is the only reason. But when you're talking about having to be somewhere, having that added pressure, you know, really the whole picture just comes into focus. And I like subjecting my students to that realistic scenario. So there you go. Just kind of depends, but typically right after solo. I could have ended there, but I hope that context gave you a little bit more help on that. Here's a great question. Is there a benefit to doing VMC practice approaches even while flying solo VFR? 100%. So here's the thing. A couple terms here that are being used by Nick. I like your username, by the way, Nick Knack. So VMC is visual meteorological conditions. Basically, it's visual conditions, VFR, but doing approaches, which are an instrument procedure in those VFR conditions while you're solo. I think that even though you can't log those, even though you can't count them toward simulated instrument or anything like that, I think it actually helps a lot more than you would think, because you get to see exactly the sight picture of the airplane in 3D space comparative to the airplane that is going to be in instrument. And you are so used to seeing the airplane in 3D space by being able to see out the windows that having that context, especially in the very beginning, is really going to help you move into those procedures. And so me, as an instrument instructor, this is even something I would do with a student to help them visualize what we're actually doing, what those degree changes that they're doing on the final approach course are actually doing. If they turn 20 degrees left to try to intercept their heading and they're headed off in the nowhere, but then we compare that to just going, you know, back and forth a little bit to find the sweet spot, that's going to help them understand what is really happening with the plane over time. So yeah, absolutely, hugely beneficial. I definitely encourage you to do that if at all possible. And of course, you can do that with air traffic control. Just, request those practice approaches. You don't actually have to be under the hood to do that. You can practice them without. So yeah, good luck. How important is understanding weather for private pilot, and can you recommend some resources? Private pilot level, it is very important to understand weather. I have to start there. It is very important to understand weather. Although we were having this conversation earlier about not having to know everything for your test, all right? There is a certain amount of that as well when it comes to private pilot. I think it is a commendable effort to learn as much as you possibly can with weather during any phase of training, during any license, because there is always, always, always more to learn about weather, regardless of where you are. So I definitely think it's a worthwhile effort. And you need to know quite a bit, and you especially need to know on the private pilot level how to avoid that weather, and how to be able to get into the aviation weather products that you've never heard of before. Getting the real hardcore data that is out there and available for those airports you're flying to, and then what is going on in between at those airports that you need to know. Now, when we're getting into IFR, now we're talking about actually flying in the weather and needing to know about the weather. So then you're getting the more tricky things like icing and embedded thunderstorms and just more to an extreme than you've experienced before. So you will never, ever, ever stop learning about weather. So while you don't need to know everything at the private pilot level, you need to learn a whole lot. You need to learn a whole lot on the instrument level. You need to learn a whole lot on the commercial level. You need to learn even more on the CFI level, more and more and more all the time. I think a really cool way to do this is to pretend every single day. I'm not in this habit right now, but I have been in the past. Pretend every single day that you're going to take a flight, especially those days where the weather is bad and you wouldn't be flying. Plan that flight with ForeFlight and look at the weather and see the different weather products that are popping up that you may not have seen before. You know, AirMets like Zulu AirMets and Tango AirMets, which would be icing and turbulence. And then your mountain obscuration, your Sierra AirMets, those things that you don't usually get to see, you know, convection, convective outlooks and convective SIGMETs. All of those things, knowing what they look like, seeing them pop up, and then maybe you're even getting into icing charts and stuff like that. But look at it, especially when there is new weather that you don't usually look at, so that you can see what's happening and to get a holistic view. I think that's really, really helpful. So yeah, I think resources, I think the practice and habit of actually doing it is the best thing. Understanding the weather products that are out there, and then knowing your particular flow on doing it, because you do not need to know everything on the weather. All right, you don't need to know absolutely everything. I'm going to give you guys one little tip here that is quite unknown, but is the one thing that you can take away as a resource today to understanding the weather a little bit better, okay? So if you go on the 4 flight and you pull up an airport, you're going to see the METAR, you're going to see the forecast. That's the area I want you to look in. There's the TAF, the Terminal Aerodrome Forecast, which is a human-generated forecast for that specific airport. And it's out into the future, so it's a forecast. It's not an observation of what's going on right now. You have the model output statistics, which is not an official thing, but you can look at that maybe out a little bit further. Not really included in your flight planning, but it might give you a better idea. But then there's the next section, which is what I'm getting at. It's the discussion. So the weather services, the people that write this weather and give us our TAFs, for example, they actually have an aviation write-up that they do in that discussion, and they will talk about what's going on a large scale in your local area in plain language, the type of weather that's coming in, what type of systems or VFR or IFR weather you can expect that will persist. It's very interesting. It's just in plain language, usually several paragraphs that just go over what's going on right now and what you can expect in the next 24 to 48 hours usually. So go ahead and check that out, the forecast discussion right there in 4 Flight. It's just a really helpful tool on top of doing the TAF, maybe the MOS as a supplement, and all the other planning that you're doing, okay? So hope that helps you. Biggest tip on the private pilot oral exam. So just as a reminder, I do have CheckRide Ace on my website, which is a CheckRide preparation program. It's essentially like, it'd be like having an hour and a half with me to prepare for your CheckRide. You know, it's $99 for private instrument commercial. So just as a preview of that, you know, my advice is all pretty consistent and the same. So my advice on the private pilot oral or any oral test is that it is not an interrogation, okay? These DPEs, these designated pilot examiners, they actually go through training as well. And when they go to training in Oklahoma, they are teaching these DPEs right now to conduct these oral examinations in scenario-based conversations. So essentially they'll ask you, like a scenario, say, hey, we're gonna be going from here to there and we just picked up a passenger. What sort of things are you going to be looking at if we were to pick up a passenger? Those are, you know, common type questions. It's not an interrogation. It's not going to be, you know, them popping up questions from the written test and saying, hey, what's a Zulu AirMet? I mentioned that earlier. What's a Zulu AirMet and what is it for and how long is it valid? They're not going to ask those sort of questions. It is a conversation with that person in realistic scenarios. So that is what you want to be, or that is what you're going to be going through with them. That's what you can expect. And it ends up just being a lot more relaxed and realistic that way, because really that's how you should be thinking as a pilot anyway. You should be thinking holistically as you're going through these different decision-making processes with the knowledge that you have to make those good decisions. That's how you're going to be thinking about it, not in multiple choice test question format. So I think it works out really, really well. All right, good question. Again, a lot more advice like that in CheckRide Ace that is available on my website, angleofattack.com, or you can even go to checkrideace.com. It should pop up there as well. Okay, getting back on the instrument topic here once again, what recommendations do you have for a private pilot that is about to begin instrument training? And I had talked about this before. Maybe there's a different way I can say it now. But essentially, it's going to be a long journey through your instrument training. And you need to go out and have fun with the license that you have, build some cross-country time, really get into the books right away on instrument and just start to work through it. And that's going to help you begin your instrument training to get into that that mentality, that mindset, that discipline. So, you know, start with a few hours with your instructor if you want to, but essentially the best thing to do is to get into scanning and understanding that. I think doing some approaches next, even visually, like someone brought up earlier, would be very helpful for you to understand what is actually happening. And then bringing that back, making sure that you really get into the study, the hardcore long-term study of this instrument material to really understand it, so that when you go to do the flying, you understand it, and then when you go to do the check ride, you understand it as well. Because what's the point of having an instrument ticket if you don't understand any of the stuff anyway? You're not going to go out and do it if you don't understand it. Adding a tail wheel endorsement to keep learning while building time, I think that's great. I think that sometimes we get so regimented in the flow of flight training that says, hey, I'm only going to do private, I'm only going to do instrument, I'm only going to do commercial, that we forget that this is supposed to be fun and there are other things that we can do. We can do a tail wheel endorsement, which there's a lot that goes in the tail wheel, so it's not something to take lightly. We can do a seaplane add-on, which is best to do after commercial because then you only take one check ride for your commercial seaplane add-on. We can do high performance, we can do high altitude, we can do complex. There's all sorts of different things you can do to spice up your training, to keep learning and moving forward. And I think that's always great to do. You're going to learn better stick and rudder skills and better wind awareness when you do your tailwheel training. So I think it is very great to do while you're building time. You may as well keep having fun doing it. So absolutely go for that tailwheel endorsement. Best way to stay determined to finish your flight training. So I'm going to point you toward a couple of resources first because I feel like they were inspired. I did a podcast not too long ago called Don't Quit Flight Training. Very simple. If you went to angleofattack.com and search that, you're going to find it quickly. It was a podcast episode here on video as well that talked about not quitting flight training. Hey, this flight training thing really gets difficult at times. I always say that people, when they learn to become pilots, they become better people because it really does take personal growth to get through this process. You're going to come up against personal, emotional, even sometimes physical barriers when you're going through flight training. And it's going to take an effort to improve as a person and push through those barriers to get to this goal. And so I think it's important to keep having fun in your training. I think it's important to realize that other people have had a hard time going through training, and that is completely normal. I think it's important to realize that those people that did have a hard time and kept pushing forward, that's how essentially all of us made it, because I don't know of anyone that really, it was a total breeze, you know. So just realize that this isn't always easy. There may be times where it's not fun, but it will be worth it. And that view of it being worth it, you should always try to keep that in view. Cause you know, the light at the end of the tunnel just says that this is going to open up new opportunities, whether that be a job or just views out your window, seeing the world from a different perspective, being able to do fun and new things with your family or your friends. There is so much enrichment to life that aviation offers. I don't think aviation is life itself, but aviation makes life better in a lot of ways. So it is worth it. When you're in the throes of training and it's pretty tough, it's hard to see that, but I would encourage you to keep that perspective. Again, I really invite you to go check out that podcast, Don't Quit Flight Training, because it was very powerful for a lot of people. And I think that somehow I just kind of hit the nail on the head. A lot of the time I don't. I miss that dang nail all the time, and I'm hitting all around it. But I hit it that time, and I think you'll really enjoy that. So go check that out. But just keep it up, man. I mean, you got to keep the momentum, the motivation, and the perspective. You got to keep it. How in the world do you stay motivated with all there is running a business such as yours? So I have been in business now. I started in 2006. It's 14 years old almost, in March actually. So I'm right there at the 14 year mark. And my business has gone through different, I guess, end results. You know, initially I was doing flight simulator training for several years, mainly for the gaming market. And then I did some corporate work. So I worked with Cirrus Aircraft on their Vision Jet training, doing a product none of you will ever see before, but doing 20 hours of training and directing a team behind the scenes that did all of their online learning curriculum for their jet. And none of you will ever see that unless you buy a Cirrus Vision Jet. And then I rolled into this new form of business, which is what I really, really care about. And what really motivates me to keep moving forward is the success of the individual. And so kind of going back to how I answered my ground school question earlier, for me, this isn't just about making money. Like, obviously, I have to do that at the end of the day to support my family. I'm a big family guy. I'm not just doing this to fly. Otherwise, I'd probably just go do the airlines. I'm doing this because I'm really invested in the personal success of people, and I get a lot of fulfillment in my life out of that. I really enjoy seeing and helping people achieve their dreams. Doing that as an instructor one-on-one is probably my absolute favorite thing to do in aviation. I just love helping people achieve their dreams by actually being there to teach them in person. But I know I can't do that with everyone, and I have the ability to teach through video and websites and things. I've been pretty good at doing that. So I think for me, you know, the money isn't crazy. It's you know, I'm not the biggest name in the industry right now. Not saying that couldn't happen eventually, but you know, I do this because it matters to people. I get messages every single day that say that my stuff has helped. And I have to believe that as I continue to grow that and focus on the individual, that that eventually I'm going to be able to reach more people and achieve a result in aviation, which is increased safety, increased knowledge, and help more people get into it and get over those barriers that that are so tough to get across. So that's why I do what I do, and that's what brings me to work every single day. I was, again, listening to this book today that was talking about that, like small victories versus long term. And I'm definitely in this the long term. I don't plan on going to the airlines. I don't plan on doing anything else. Not saying it couldn't happen at some point in some form or another, but I'm in this the long term to be a lifelong instructor and educator and really enjoy that. And so I have personal motivation to keep doing it. And I think that I would also encourage you, invite you, because, you know, your story is not my story. I would invite you to find your story. What is your story in aviation? Where do you fit? What gets you out of bed every day in the morning to go and pursue an aviation? You know, there's not just one answer. It might be the airlines. It might be agriculture work. It might be an instructor. It might be corporate work. It might be teaching. It could be any number of things. Maybe you know, I have a friend that is really enjoying working at an airport right now as ops manager, and his main career might not be in the actual flying, but rather in airport operations. He's having a great time. There are so many different aspects of aviation that we can enjoy. So find what you want to do, what fulfills you, what gets you out of bed every day, and I encourage you to do that. But yeah, that's a little bit of my story and what makes my clock tick, and why I keep doing these videos every week. Now you see a little bit of why, because I really do want to help people and help them get to where they're going. And what result comes of that, if it's a successful business or if it's just a bunch of acquaintances and friends that I have throughout the years, whatever it is, I know that that will have positive effect. So that's what I'm doing. That's why I do what I do. Thanks everyone for being here on this episode of Motivation Monday. Hope that you got something out of these questions that were answered today. Again, if you want to ask a question live on the show, typically I put up the questions to be asked on Sunday night, or rather the ability to ask those questions, and then I answer them on Monday. So feel free to join in on Instagram when that happens. If you are watching this on YouTube, please subscribe to our channel. We'd love to send you more of the great training material that we're putting out. We have lots of great plans for the future as well. We have our Motivation Monday that comes out on Mondays. We have our 1 Minute Wings, and we have our podcast that comes out every Friday. And you should see even more material coming out as we ramp up that effort to give great training content to you. So make sure to subscribe, like this video, share it, please. And if you are on any other platform, say iTunes or something, listening to the audio of this, or Spotify, make sure to subscribe as well. We are consistently releasing this podcast to everybody. So just appreciate you being here and hope that we can continue to help you in your journey to becoming a more knowledgeable, a safer, a more proficient aviator. So happy to be in that journey with you. And until next time, throttle on.